You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Faith Wilding. She's calling me from Providence, Rhode Island. Faith, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you. This is a pleasure for me.
Faith, let's talk about what you're working on now. I imagine it's more than one thing. So just to begin to articulate your practice, what is it that you're currently involved in or working on?
Well, I'm working on a project that I started last year with a grant from Art Matters, which is a wonderful organization based in New York, which gives artists grants to do what they would like to do. So what I proposed to them was I wanted to track the colonial extraction of plants from Paraguay and where they ended up in European and American herbariums. And then I wanted to make some kind of artwork about that, and I also wanted to go back to Paraguay, where I was born and grew up, and see which of those plants actually still are growing in the forests, and because I know that Paraguay has been 90% deforested, and also see what's now in the botanical garden in Paraguay, and so thinking about how landscapes and countries and ecosystems are changed by colonization and then by agriculture and so on. And of course, it's a huge project, you know. It's like,
a huge project. So you've been researching, like, what stage are you at in that project now?
Well, I've gone to a couple of herbariums. Do I have to explain to the audience what a herbarium is? There was a big article about it today in Hypoallergic, if they want to check that out. A herbarium is basically a collection of plants that is like a library of plants, so to speak. The plants are dead. They're sewn or stuck onto pieces of paper, and so, you know, they're dead as doornails, but they are a trace of of what, you know, has been extracted from or gathered, you know, in various places. So in that way, they're sort of like libraries. So what I did first was I went, for example, to Geneva for 10 days, where they have an amazing collection of Paraguayan plants. Who would have thunk it, right? That were collected by a Swiss doctor when he was practicing in Paraguay like 150 years ago and sent them all to Geneva, into the botanical garden there. So that's one collection. Kew Gardens in London has another huge collection, the Field Museum in Chicago, the Smithsonian. So I've been trying to track, you know, so it's a lot of research and travel, and then I do many drawings, and then I couldn't help myself. I just started to make some work. I've mostly been working with on paper, on large pieces of paper with with watercolors and ink and drawing and cutting and paper weaving and then I'm making some little objects, which are sort of like book objects. So, I'm doing a lot of reading, too, about what has replaced the vegetation and where there used to be jungles that I've roamed in Paraguay. I know that sounds really romantic, but it's actually true.
It does. And so those places no longer exist in Paraguay, you're saying?
Well, I am going there to check it out myself because, you know, according to my research, it's 90% deforested, and, you know, there's massive, massive just fields and fields and fields. You can't even call them fields, just whole landscapes of genetically modified soy plants. Paraguay is one of the biggest suppliers of soy, along with Argentina and southern Brazil. And, you know, so it's the genetically modified crop landscape that's replaced the forests, you know, which, of course, changes everything, the weather, the lives of the farmers and peasants who used to live, you know, on this land and have small, tiny farms and try to, you know, support themselves through that. So, yeah, so, you know, there's just a lot of really sad and but interesting and, you know, knowledge, I think, to be gained from trying to sort of track these, you know, these journeys of extraction. I call them journeys of extraction because that's right. Really what's happening is, you know, the kind of colonial extraction was on every level, you know, from people's labor, people's DNA, plant DNA, you know, mining, everything. And it's still going on, obviously, but, yeah.
And so how will this end up? Let's say the research is done and you travel there, and I know you'll gather much more information, so that'll possibly, that'll, of course, impact exactly how it's coming together. But what will the final installation or presentation look like?
Yeah, I think hopefully it'll be an installation. I want to do several things. I want to do an installation, and I also want to do a book, some kind of a book, maybe some kind of a book that's sort of like a, oh, what do you call it when you keep like a record of your travels? It's kind of like a diary, yeah. And, you know, I'm also hoping to make some video. And, you know, I mean, I work in so many media that, you know, it's almost, yeah, I could make a radio program, too. I used to work quite a bit in sound and radio. You know, so it'll be a variety of things.
And where would that be? Would you have a venue for where that would be shown or presented?
Well, I hope to interest some people in it. I've got a solo show in Chicago in November and December, and it's a commercial gallery, but it's a big one and has a lot of space, and so I'm hoping to maybe debut a little part of this work just to start, you know, getting people interested in it. I hope to show it and install it. I hope to show it in Paraguay too. So I'm hoping to make, you know, to contact some people that I've been put in touch with and just see, you know, because I think that's actually where it would have hopefully also a strong impact.
Right. That makes sense. And that would, of course, I mean, requires the enjoyable process of also going back home and traveling through the country, right?
Yes, I hope so. You know, who knows, you know, where I grew up was like, as they say, in the middle of nowhere. Of course, it was not nowhere. It was somewhere. But it was basically, you know, smack deep in the countryside. It was like a night-long riverboat trip to go to to go to the capital city, Asuncion, you know, where I ended up studying for a year before I came to the United States. But, you know, basically living in really in the middle of the campo and the forests and, you know, living, I grew up in a commune. That's a long story. I'm writing my memoirs, too. So,
so tell me about this. Okay, so you're also, I mean, just to step back for a minute and look at the other things you're doing. There's this research and installation product that started with a grant from Art Matters. And then you're also writing your memoirs. Is that the other writing project or?
Well, we're doing a book. A book is being done about my work, basically my artwork, my life's artwork.
And who's doing that book? How is that? When you say we, what does that involve?
My editor is Shannon Stratton, who is right now the chief curator of the Museum of Art and Design in New York, and she had done a retrospective of my work in Chicago. She used to run a gallery named Three Walls in Chicago, and she had mounted the first retrospective of my work there in 2014, and then it traveled to Memphis and to Houston and to Los Angeles, and so she and I decided to make a book about that, and so it's going to be more or less, you know, what they call a monograph, but it's got essays from like 8 different writers and some excerpts of my memoir and tons of illustrations, because, you know, a lot of people think I'm only know me as a performance artist, somebody who worked, you know, at Woman House and with a feminist art program in Fresno and in California, and that is true. I did do that, and but, you know, most people don't know that I've had a lifetime of making art, mostly visual, like lots of paintings and drawings, and, you know, which are all in storage in Los Angeles. So
this book will comprise all of that, the paintings and drawings you've done,
yeah,
and also, so yeah, it's somewhat a retrospective, but then there's going to be,
yeah,
excerpts from your memoir within it.
Yeah, yeah, precisely, yeah. So we're working on that with a publisher in England, Intellect Books, which is a very good university publisher, and, oh, God, hopefully we'll be done within the next year. It's, you know, it's a super long process, this.
Well, so yeah, it's a lot to be done. So can you tell me something from maybe something you've worked on recently, but just perhaps tell a story from your memoir or a memory or one of the things you're working on now, because I'm sure you have such a rich history to draw from. Is there any one thing you'd want to share from your memoir that maybe in this upcoming a monograph as well?
I don't know. I don't know if that would work out for me to do.
Okay.
That. I mean, I've been doing some readings from my memoir. I did one.
So
in
yeah,
Glasgow.
From the readings that you've done from your memoir, do you want to discuss any of those or what you're drawing from when you read from your memoir, just to get a sense of how the memoir is kind of angled? It's essentially about your life, I'd imagine. But when you do these readings, is there a particular story you like to tell or you want to reference here?
Uh-huh. Well, the memoir so far, anyway, is only about the first 20 years of my life. That's already making quite a fat book. But what I'm trying to write about, what I have been writing about, is, you know, it's like, you know, when I think about my life, it's all like this weird coincidences, right? But it's also a war, it's a refugee story, and it's a war story, a Second World War story, because my parents, who are British, and you might detect a slight British accent in my voice too, joined a commune that had started in Germany in 1920, and then had been thrown out by the Nazis in the mid-30s, and it had moved to England. I know it's confusing. And my father, who was a conscientious objector in England, joined this commune and persuaded my mother to join it too. And like and this was in 1939, which was when Britain joined, you know, joined the war against Germany and declared war against Germany. So that was, you know, a very scary kind of year, but my parents were very young and very idealistic, and they joined this commune of mostly Germans that had, you know, am I being clear at all? Moved to
you
England.
Are. That's very clear. I'm following the timeline, and you're being completely clear.
Okay, that's the story. And, you know, and then the British Home Office decided there were too many German males in the commune, and it's either like everybody has to leave England, or they have to put the men in a camp during the war, because that's what happened with Germans who were living in England during the war. They were also put into camps. I mean, they weren't like nasty concentration camps, but they were, you know, they were like prison camps. So the commune decided to everybody leave England. You know, the British members, the European members, the German members, everybody leave England because they wanted to stay together. And so the only country that would take them in, this was in 1941, was Paraguay. So the Mennonites also helped with that. And so off they went to Paraguay.
Wow.
I mean, it's, you know, it's not that simple. And then they bought this piece of land in the middle of nowhere in Paraguay and, you know, built up several villages there for the commune, basically from scratch.
That's pretty exciting. Yeah, that is a big story.
Yeah, so that's the big story, and you know, sort of the backstory, and what I'm trying to extract out of that is, how did I become who I have become? I guess that's what memoirs are about in a way, right?
Well, right, and what you just described is some pretty formative years, and
yeah,
you know, in terms of international travel and politics and everything. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, and you know, growing up with European refugees basically, and growing up trilingual. All my schooling was in German. My parents made us speak English at home, and then we had to take state for the state of Paraguay. We had to take several of our school years in completely in Spanish. So, you know, that's an incredible gift to me. To have that kind of, you know, incredible kind of schooling and upbringing, and it was very artistically rich, and also was very rich in making stuff, because we made everything ourselves, basically, from shoes to clothes to, you know, my father learned how to run a whole agricultural farming thing. You know, we were completely pretty much self-sufficient. So that's a fantastic training for an artist, you know, which, you know, when I became an art professor here in America, I realized my students didn't have a most of my students didn't have a clue of how to make anything. Like, you know, if they wanted to make a costume for a performance, it's like, how do you make a pattern? How do you, you know, go and buy material and, you know, cut out a
right.
pattern? And so it took, you know, now actually in most art schools, crafts have become so important to people. They don't call them crafts, but, you know, like crocheting, weaving, making stuff is like really, really hot now, you know, thinking about materials and materiality and, you know, which I think is probably a reaction to the overuse of digital machines and, you know, the kind of the virtuality of much of their experience. So,
right.
you know, so this is like a really strong kind of thread that runs through my life and my work is, you know, the handmade, the material, the nature, you know, the deep experience of nature that I had as a child. And, you know, so I write about that in my memoir and, you know, the amazing kind of attention that I was able to pay as a child to all of the nature around me, you know, and the insects and the flowers and the, you know, in the way that, you know, kids that are now, you know, sitting in front of screens and doing video games with all kinds of, you know, attention. My attention was very differently focused. And I think that,
sure.
you know, led to the way I make work and the kind of work I make. And at least this is how people are responding to it, you know, that they are seeing a deep kind of engagement with, you know, with the stuff of life, basically, the stuff of nature, the stuff of life. You know, and then there's the whole feminist kind of layer also, since I grew up in this very patriarchal religious commune, you know, I became a rebellious girl early on. And so, you know, so there's this sort of these themes
right.
in both my work and my memoir.
Well, I look forward to that monograph coming out, and it sounds exciting and also you know, quite a big project to manage until it's done. I want to ask you before we go, what are you reading now? The question I ask everybody at the end, it could be off topic or not, but I would love to know whatever it is that you're currently looking at.
Well, I'm rereading Janet Frame's beautiful, fantastic memoir. I've been reading a lot of memoirs just to see how other people manage it. An Angel at My Table, which was also made into a film, Janet Frame. She was from New Zealand. And then I'm reading a book called Object-Oriented Feminism, recently published. It has several essays about object-oriented feminism. I cannot explain that to you in two words. Then I'm looking through a new anthology that just came that's published by the Documents of Contemporary Art, and it's on boredom. Oh, my God, all these people writing on boredom. And for some reason, they reprinted my waiting monologue, which is my claim to fame, in the boredom book. That's really interesting, don't you think? And then I'm rereading Willa Cather's beautiful, beautiful book about an opera singer called The Song of the Lark, and which I read as a child and which decided me that I'm definitely going to be an artist. And then I'm reading all the back issues of The New Yorker that I haven't caught up on. And that's what's on my coffee table right now. Does that answer your question?
It does.
Faith, oh, I have one more thing. The Prison Letters to Sophie Liebknecht from Rosa Luxemburg. Okay. Prison Letters. Nice.
Very good.
Faith, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure hearing about your work and progress and what you're reading as well. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.